MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Chatting with David Buckham, he's CEO of Monocle Solutions. The reason I've got David on the line today, they sent me a book towards the end of last year, read it over my holidays, The End of Money, The Great Erosion of Trust in Banking, China's Minsky Moment, and the Fallacy of Cryptocurrency. David, appreciate your time today. Appreciate the copy of the book that you sent me, a good old-fashioned dead tree version. My sense from reading is that, I mean, the world is an unhappy and tricky place, and that's not a new or outrageous statement to make. But what you sort of the theme running through the book is that there's a erosion of trust in our financial system, and you very much link that to an erosion of trust in our sort of global liberal democracy system at the same time.
Yes, Simon. Well, first of all, thank you very much for taking the time to read the book and really appreciate being on your show. We did notice, I mean, with the last 30 years, we've noticed a simultaneous decline in democracy, which kind of apexed in 1989 with the fall of the Berlin Wall. And then at the same time, a enormous erosion of trust in banking, which is kind of very obvious when you look at the joy with which people have sanctified the idea of decentralized finance and let's get rid of banking. And the question that we ask in the book is, is this simply a correlated trend, these two trends, or is there causality in it? And our view is that the one causes the other. This is kind of extreme version of capitalism that's propagated from the Harvard School of Business, you know, all the way through the American system. You've got the Wall Street movie, Oliver Stone almost celebrates greed is good.
Yeah.
And the consequence is that you have bad actors within the financial system that repeatedly and without sanction destroy trust. And you've got tax evasion, rising inequality, and then people don't trust the banks, and therefore they don't trust the financial system. But at the same time, they lose faith in democracy. So Hong Kong goes relatively unnoticed. You know, South Sudan. I think, Simon, you might be aware that 17 missionaries were abducted in Haiti. You know, and nothing's happened yet. $1 million they want per person. And in times of past, you know, Reagan sent troops into Panama to get Manuel Noriega. So we live in a very different time where people care less about democracy, and that's very worrying to me.
And in the book, I mean, you know, in some senses, it goes all the way. Nixon was perhaps a key start point, Bretton Woods, and the exiting of that, the gold standard. You mentioned the Berlin Wall. I remember I was a teen when that happened for me. I thought this was a beginning of the glory days, and it wasn't. You absolutely agree on that. And then, of course, just over a decade ago, 14 years ago, so the financial crisis of 08, 09, the phrase often, no bankers went to jail. But the flip side of that, of course, was the start of quantitative easing, which, we sit 14 years later, and we're still quantitative easing. Jerome Powell's talking around tapering, but there is money just being pumped into a system, almost in a sense, to prop it up.
Yeah, to me, it's completely unbelievable. In 2004, the size of the Fed's balance sheet was $800 billion. Mm-hmm. And the size of the Fed's balance sheet as of today is $8.8 trillion, $9 trillion. So tapering is just a reduction in the number of bond purchases that take place, but you're still expanding the balance sheet. Whilst last night we had inflation at 7%, the highest in 40 years. So Jerome Powell is doing pretty much exactly the wrong thing, too slow, but he's working in a system that has 10 times more money than we had, you know, less than 20 years ago. So I, you know, people ask, I wonder if Bitcoin is taking away from, you know, the gold market. No, not at all. Bitcoin is a new asset that's just added on top of a very overheated equity market. And the fact that commodities aren't also up, you know, is a blessing in disguise. I mean, we're having all the markets are very up. And I think the really bad thing about this is it was the lazy way out. Instead of building bridges, doing New Deal type stuff, you know, building dams and, you know, creating real economic benefit for 50 to 100 years, they just printed money and bought bonds. And just never stopped.
I was chatting with Chantal Marks yesterday. When inflation was lost at these levels, 1982, interest rates in America were over 15%, which drives your point. I want to come to crypto in a moment. The other key point was China as a massive risk sitting on the sort of global horizon, in a sense. And I suppose part of this is, how does it play out? A lot of the crypto fans will tell you, this is all going to collapse. It's going to crash, you know, sometimes before Easter, maybe before Christmas. My sense from the book is this is going to be a slow unraveling, and truthfully is happening.
Yes, I think it's been unraveling. We just haven't noticed since 2018. The start of it was the Hong Kong intervention. Yeah. The Chinese bank's balance sheets it's last we counted was $49 trillion. And that is, to put it in perspective, the U.S. bank balance sheet is $22 trillion, $21 trillion. And U.S. GDP is $20 trillion and Chinese GDP is $15 trillion. So no matter which way you look at it, Chinese banking assets to GDP, which is a very good metric, to look at it holistically, mm-hmm. is way, way bigger than any large economy should ever be. And we know, for example, that China has made loans into Africa, like this recent Entebbe airport story where the loan is at a 2% rate, you know, completely non-economical. It hasn't priced risk and it hasn't priced credit risk. These loans aren't being paid back. And that's about $6 trillion of the $49 trillion goes to the Belt and Road Initiative. So as China's debt bubble bursts, because China is not a democratic country, which doesn't have free, therefore doesn't have free press, I don't think we're going to see a bigger kind of public explosion like we had with Lehman. And I think Evergrande's just the tip of the iceberg. I think it's going to be more like a long, slow burn, and you're going to see increasingly autocratic behavior because the person on the ground in China is going to be suffering economically, and they've worked very hard. You know, they've worked very long, mm-hmm. long hours, and their children are not going to work those same hours. And you've got a declining working population because of the one-child policy. So in order to pay off their debt, just the interest-bearing part, they're going to have to grow at more than 6%. And we worked out that that means per person over the next 15 years, they'd have to grow at 10%, which is 10% increased productivity, which is impossible. So I do think that China is not a failed state. It's not a failing state. It's a slow burn. With unfortunately a characteristic of autocracy.
It's the slow puncture, to use an analogy. The one of the subtitles is The Fallacy of Cryptocurrency. You've mentioned crypto. A lot of my listeners out there are like, this is all perfect. Crypto steps into that space and solves this problem. I've never been convinced. You're certainly not convinced by that.
No. Cryptocurrency is one of the silliest ideas in the history of human endeavor. I study mathematics at university, so the actual cryptographic function, which is the kind of underlying technology that underlies it, is a particularly stupid idea, which is that you get computers to crunch through the factors of the prime factors to find the prime factors of 100-digit numbers. So you're just burning energy. that's called proof of work.
Yeah.
And the collaborative way is basically a completely trusted system in which you have thousands of people doing the same thing to authenticate each transaction. So if Bitcoin were to become a real currency, which you use to purchase goods on a daily basis, they would have to move away from proof of work. And aside from anything, it's philosophically, philosophically bad, because we're celebrating not having a central financial system. So it's the equivalent of not having a central medical system. You know, and a lot of people, you know, with COVID haven't trusted the medical fraternity, and you've got the non-vaxxers. So you're always going to have tensions in a centralized system. But if we think of the police, for example, if we think of the emergency services, if we think of aircraft rules and regulations, mm-hmm. if we don't trust the banking system, and we replace it with a completely trustless, inefficient system, which, by the way, Simon, as you know, most people don't even care about the decentralized finance part of it. They're just trading an asset that keeps going up.
Speculative, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it's a silly idea. At best, it will become a regulated currency. At best, it will become fully regulated like any other part of the central system. At worst, it will crash.
And that's, I mean, you know, the whole idea of not having any oversight. I always say, well, that's fine, then we're living in Mad Max, and that's not a world we want to be living in. We're going to leave it there. That's David Buckham. He's CEO of Monocle Solutions, but the book is The End of Money, Great Erosion of Trust in Banking, China's Minsky Moment, and the Fallacy of Cryptocurrency. Get yourself a copy, read it. It makes for some fascinating reading. David, really appreciate the time.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com. to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.